Thank you for tuning in to Diaries of a Dom plus Questions Answered with me, Chastity Queen. Today is usually my Storytime Sunday, but I'm mixing it up a little bit. I'm going to create a longer tease for you, so you have to wait one more whole week for the next Storytime Sunday, because I want to talk about some of the news, some of the media reports on misogyny. And I want to discuss the topic, toxic masculinity. So I've got my lovely slave, who's always willing to do whatever I ask him to do, because he worships me as a female dominant, which is totally anti-misogynistic. It's non-misogynistic. And a misogynist would never do such a thing. So we're going to carry on and discuss somebody named Andrew Tate. And I only got to know him in the past maybe 2 days. He's really not been on my radar because I don't tend to follow misogynistic men too closely or give a shit. But he was deplatformed from Instagram and Facebook, and apparently for being an absolutely hateful, vile person. So Andrew Tate, his actual name is Emery Andrew Tate III. So he's third on the totem pole. And he is, let's see, he was born in Chicago and he was brought up in the UK. He ended up on Big Brother UK and was kicked off because of a video that came to light of him beating a woman up. And he was banned on Twitter for saying women should bear responsibility, in quotes, for being sexually assaulted. So women should bear responsibility, which is ridiculous. He is a cruiserweight. He's a former kickboxer, basically. And yet what has made him most notorious is his desire for attention and getting it at all costs, even by being an asshole. So I'm going to ask my slave, my consenting slave, my loving submissive man, what he knows about this Andrew Tate, and when did he first find out about him?
Oh, when I heard of him was yesterday, probably the same time you did. I honestly never heard of this guy. I mean, I'm not really a TikTok person. I guess this was where his big presence is right now. But I that's why we need to talk about this guy. Because TikTok, I mean, most people know TikTok to be more of a thing for younger people, like under 18. Like that's the biggest following on TikTok. And let's be honest, young people are very influential, or influenced, I should say. It's not that I'm not saying stupid or anything. I'm just saying that they're influenced easy by people they perceive and they idolize and whatnot. I mean, then usually sports people are usually idolized. The guy, I mean, he was a kickboxer. I mean, I don't remember his exact record. I mean, it was pretty good from what I've read. I mean, the funny story I read was that one of his fights, he got pummeled in the first round and got the ref to call an end to the fight because his eye was hurting or something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but so don't quote me on that. But and you also brought up how he says he believes that women need to bear responsibility for being assaulted. I mean, at the same time, I mean, I think it was in a separate interview. We only been watching bits and pieces of it, but he also said that, you know, like there is nothing a woman can do against most men. So that kind of almost that he's contradicting himself there. Like you can't have it both ways. You can't say that women have to bear responsibility, but then, you know, I mean, I get he's talking about like the whole argument that a lot of people love to say, like, oh, well, you know, she's wearing skimpy clothes, so she wanted to be raped. Like, no, that's bullshit. Like that's not how that works. Rapists are rapists. That's the bottom line. You're just not going to just sit there and say, oh, look at that. She's wearing like a crop top. I'm going to, you know, like that's bullshit. That's absolute bullshit. And like I said, he contradicts himself. You're basically saying women can't fight off a guy, but they have to bear responsibility for being assaulted. Absolute bullshit.
Yes, I have to say that, you know, when you mentioned about TikTok, that was my main concern, is because I think that what we're doing as a couple that live in a completely different world from, let's just say, the masses, you know, of society, we have entered into BDSM where terms like property are discussed, ownership, slavery, submissive, dominant, different role-playing facets. And so for you and I, we live in this alternate universe where those things are the same names. Like he would say, women are my property. And if they are filming on OnlyFans, they have to give me a portion of their money. You know, basically he's a pimp. He's just a modern day pimp. Now, the way that BDSM looks at the term slave, and this is why I started off saying my consensually, you know, my slave who's consenting, is because consent is the key. And you have to go in with informed consent. So you can't just say, well, I consent, but you don't understand what you're consenting to. Legally, you need to understand. So you need to be of age to understand, first of all. And these children that are on the platforms such as TikTok, Instagram, they don't understand what is happening when a man who's 35 years old tells a mass of children, you know, and adults too, that he owns or considers the women that he takes to bed as his property. So they don't understand. They don't have the informed consent mindset that when adults go into a situation in BDSM, where you have a master-slave situation, which is basically what I am. I'm a master. My partner is my slave, based on the dynamic within a BDSM arrangement. It could be a poly situation. It could be a daddy situation with littles. It could be a mummy situation with her little, her submissive. She could be a dom. She could be a sadist with her masochist. There's so many different varieties. So I think it's really important that, you know, he doesn't want to be canceled. But being a criminal and speaking about crimes that you commit on social media, where it's a platform, basically it's a platform, it's a stage. People are listening to you. It's very important what we have to say to people. We have to take responsibility for the things that we say. And I think that's what's missing in his world. He's an attention whore. Basically, I was reading a bit about him, even though it's, you know, I'm only reading because I want to get into the mindset so that I can talk to other people about how wrong it is. And I want to understand that headspace that he's in, which is, I think he's delusional, basically. I don't think he has much intelligence, and that can be a dangerous thing in the wrong hands, especially a perpetrator like him. I don't think that hate speech should ever have a platform. If he wants to have a podcast and he wants to talk his shit, then more power to him. But I honestly don't think that a place where there are easily influenced children and misinformed adults, I don't think it's a good place for a man like him to be, because he is suggesting with his hate speech that raping a woman, yeah, well, it's her fault. He's moved to Romania, I believe it is, because he had said in one of the pieces that men get away with more in European countries than, say, America. You know, from what he's been saying and from the things that have been alleged, charges have been placed. He hasn't been convicted yet, but for rape, false imprisonment, sex trafficking, all of the terrible things, as I said, which are criminal. So I don't think criminality should have a voice. I don't think that is free speech, being able to talk about crimes, being able to suggest that you can get away with crimes because, oh, we live in a free country, or we're European, so you're not going to get into trouble, as much trouble, if you live in another country like Romania, for example. That's an insult to Romanians, for goodness sakes. I mean, honestly, he's insulting everybody he can. And that's where, when he talked about this attention economy, right? He said, it's really hard for a man to get noticed. That's what he said. And I took that very seriously because I thought, he doesn't feel heard. He doesn't feel like he has anything that he can offer, even above and beyond his kickboxing. He doesn't have anything to offer where he will be noticed unless he starts to say ridiculously outlandish things and look like this big macho schmacho guy. And suddenly he's entered into the attention economy. And in BDSM, there's a term for a person like him. It's a very specific term. And some people, you know, say, hey, yeah, that's what I am. Well, I'm going to give him his title under BDSM, and that's an attention whore, right? There's certain people who absolutely and utterly in BDSM, outside of BDSM, all around the world, are attention whores. You know, there's an ex-president we know who's an attention whore and who will say anything he can. He will lie. He will cheat. He will not pay his bills. He will grab people no matter where they want to be grabbed or not because he thinks it's funny. And I think as a society, we have to stand up and say, yeah, we all believe in freedom of speech, but where do we draw the line? And when it comes down to it, criminality should be enough. And hateful speech, that there could be blurred lines with hateful speech, but there's also very black and white hateful speech, and I think that needs to be addressed. So I'm going to hand it over to my lovely bunny so that you can discuss it. And we do want to talk about the BDSM property versus the kind of property that a person like Andrew Tate talks about.
Yeah, I mean, BDSM property. Again, this is all, it's all consensual. For me, it's fun. For both of us, it's fun, really. I mean, it's something we do for our, basically our sexual pleasure, I mean. So it's not like I'm, like, being forced to do this. I am 100% consenting to this whole thing. So that's the big difference here. It's not like it's not the traditional form of what slavery and ownership is. It's a consenting contract. I mean, in the BDSM community, there's a contract usually. I mean, between my queen and I, it's verbal now more than anything, but when we first started, it was, we actually had a written one that we both physically signed. We've made like changes, adjustments to it. So again, that's why it's more verbal now than an actual written one. But I would honestly recommend anyone who's getting into, like, newly getting into BDSM, yes, for sure, have a written contract. Because that way it's like, okay, you don't get blindsided by things or whatever. And it's like, you don't get triggering things. Because when you have a contract, you can actually discuss it. You can have a discussion about it and iron out what, you know, you expect from each other. And again, that's the best thing, right? Communication. You got to have communication. That's a great way of actually getting it out there and communicating the whole relationship. And it's just like any relationship, right? A BDSM relationship is just like any other. You communicate, and when you communicate, that's when you work things out. You get things done. When you don't communicate, that's when problems happen. I mean, I'm kind of going on a bit of a tangent here, but about BDSM. We started off with BDSM property and all that stuff, the difference between slavery and all that, and I started going on about about safety again. Just call me Mr. BDSM Safety. It's the second time I've gone on a tangent about this. And so anyway, we also talked earlier, or you spoke earlier about how free speech and hate speech. I'm all for free speech. I consider hate speech completely different. There is that fine line sometimes, but I find when it leads to violence or has the potential to lead to violence, and I believe that is called stochastic terrorism, where you say something and hey, maybe like 99.99% of people won't actually do something about it. But then you have that 0.001% who will actually do something. And usually it's violent. So yeah, that's what I have to say on that one.
You know, the safety and the involvement with BDSM, and anytime you call somebody your property, what that should encompass, and it should be something that's really complex and detailed. You can't just say, well, I'm a man and you're a woman, you're my property automatically. I mean, that's just absolute ridiculous. It's a ridiculous assumption. That would be so stupid to expect that. But unfortunately, there is a segment of male society, and they believe that having a fancy car, being rich, and having girls, you know, is enough to call yourself a successful man. You know, like if you got all those things, you're a success. Well, that's just absolute stupidity. So, and he thinks because, oh, I was a kickboxer, I was a bigwig in that realm, and that he can start collecting girls, cars, money, and that somehow makes him, like, poof, you put all those things into a magician's hat and out comes success. Not true at all. I want to go over the definition of toxic masculinity, and I've just went online basically and looked it up under fandom. Toxic masculinity is one of the ways in which patriarchy is harmful to men. It refers to socially constructed attitudes that describe the masculine gender role as violent, unemotional, sexually aggressive, and so forth. Then it talks about how patriarchy hurts men too. You know, I think that a lot of men have to stand up, and I've seen on Twitter, since Andrew Tate has become a controversial topic of the day, he'll be forgotten tomorrow when there's another topic. But today, a lot of men are talking about how toxic he is and how he does not serve as a role model for all men, which is fair. I'm going to talk a little bit about the contract in a BDSM relationship. So let's say, you know, I'm the dom, which I am, and let's just take Bunny and I as an example. I'm the dom, he's my sub. At the beginning of our relationship, we drew up a contract. Actually, I wrote it up, I sent it to him, I had him look at it, he tweaked it a little bit, I looked at it, and then when we got together, we both read it, and we both signed it. And we didn't go so far as to get a witness to the, you know, to the signing, but whatever. It's, you know what? We took the steps. We were being responsible. And now, yes, we're doing the verbal thing. So we've come to a point in a relationship where we understand each other's safeties and each other's hard limits and soft limits. And we know just naturally when we're testing those. And that's because it's taken us a few years of getting to know each other to really come to this place of comfortability. But I recommend for anybody getting into a DS, if you're, say, a man who wants to be dominant, that's not what I would consider toxic masculinity. There's regular masculinity, which is there's nothing wrong with being a masculine person at all. There's very healthy masculinity. So if you want to get into that role play in a sexual manner with your partner or partners, I highly recommend reading up on it, doing your research, and when you show respect for each other, even a contract can be a good way to allow your partner to feel more comfortable with the fact that you're taking this seriously. And if somebody, and the main deal is, if any of those things, those specifics listed in the contract are ignored or completely disregarded, that ends the contract. You no longer are bound to that person. And it's an automatic, sorry, I can't take you to court. I'm not going to hold you to it because you broke, you know, section 2 about, you know, hard limit. I do not ever want to wear female panties. And she has you tied up, your hands tied, and she slips on some panties onto you. And she knows it's a hard limit. It seems like a small thing, but it's not. It's a hard limit for you for a number of reasons. And because she's crossed that line, the minute she does that, you can say, you know, call your safe word and say, listen, Did you forget what was in the contract? Because this is what it says. If she, you know, legitimately forgot, then you can discuss it and that's fine. But if she says, ah, fuck it, I felt like it. I'm your master. I'm your dom. You have to wear panties now. I've decided. End of contract, period. And guess what? Contract or no contract, she's gone over your hard limit and she has crossed that and she's ultimately disrespected you as a partner. So that's where you have to draw the line. So we need to be responsible and intelligent in our relationships. And if we're letting somebody like Andrew Tate say, you're my property, you know, I'd be looking at him saying, in what sense? Like, how so? Okay, what about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? I don't think he'd have an answer for me. He really wouldn't, because I'm a man. Sorry, Andrew, that's not going to cut it. Because you've got a penis and balls, I'm going to just automatically be your property. Absolutely not. So, you know, you got to be reasonable and respectful and smart about any partnerships you get involved in. So, Bunny, I know you want to say a few things about this. So I'm going to hand you the floor.
Yeah, honestly, he would just call you a feminist and just try to, like, not even engage, like, or he would just get insulting and or whatever with you. That just seems like the type of person he would be right there. I guess I'm going to go back onto something here that you discussed about. I forget exactly what it was. I put a note here, but what I wanted to say. But I mean, he talks about being, or yeah, he's talking about being rich and everything. But at the same time, I noticed he put down men who strive for wealth. Well, he himself is striving for wealth, which, you know, it's, again, it's just another example of how he contradicts himself. He very much connects himself with a certain movement around that certain ex-president you've discussed earlier. In case you haven't really noticed, I'm pretty much talking about Trump at this point and the MAGA movement. He has very much got himself very entangled into the MAGA movement. And I mean, it makes sense. I mean, Trump is a toxic masculine figure. I mean, he is the very definition of a toxic masculine man, or if you want to use those terms. So it's funny because it's like, yeah, he believes most men, or we've talked about this already, or you've talked about this actually, where he calls most men cowards, or most modern men cowards and pussies and stuff like that. And, you know, he says like the modern day version of way men fight and get like powerful is getting rich. And I mean, that's nothing new. Come on. Anyone who studies history knows that, you know, the men have been getting, people in general have been using wealth as a way of getting power. I mean, more so than fighting. Fighting was a means of getting that power for a lot of historic figures. So like the fighting was like, he's an idiot. Like, let's be honest. If you have to resort to fighting to get what you want or to solve problems, you're just being stupid. I mean, I love history. Like, don't get me wrong. I like World War II history and everything. So it's like, but I don't like war. I don't think it's needed. There's definitely better ways of solving problems than fighting. But this is not how he thinks. He thinks that that's how you solve problems is by fighting. And again, he just doubles back on what he says and, you know, says, fighting and certain other ways. But he keeps backing himself into a corner without even realizing he's doing it. It's actually pretty funny when you're paying attention to it.
And earlier when we were talking about doing a podcast episode on this toxic masculinity subject, I thought it was interesting that you mentioned our own poly situation. So, you know, most people know that you and I are a DS, so I'm your dom, your femdom, female dominant in the long form, and you're my submissive or my slave in chastity. And, you know, there's a variety of things you enjoy. You love to be sissified and emasculated, and you love the small penis humiliation and all of, you know, these fun things that men like him would think, oh, she's just using this as an excuse to degrade male gender, right? And one thing that he said was, this Andrew guy says, I think the most unhappy women in the world are women who try to be men and men who act like they want to be women, right? So that's what Andrew says. And I will tell you this much. First of all, as a femdom, I don't want to be a man. That's not why I'm a female dominant. I'm simply, my personality is dominant and I happen to have a pussy. So, I'm a female dominant. Now, Bunny is a submissive man. He likes to dress up like a sissy. Does it make him unhappy to dress up like a girl? Absolutely not. I asked him that specifically. He'll talk about that in a minute. Am I unhappy because I'm dominating? You know, well, first of all, I'm not trying to be a man. And second of all, I think females can be just as strong as their male counterparts. And I'm extremely happy. So just because I'm dominating a situation doesn't mean I'm an unhappy person. And that's why I'm dominating. There's a lot of men and women who choose to be dominant. And it's because there's a reason. So they're not naturally dominant. They want to dominate. So they want to dominate to effectively therapize themselves. Now, that's going to happen in any of society. And Andrew's one example. He's obviously therapizing himself by degrading and promoting rape culture and being a misogynist. In essence, he's just missing a lot of things, which is, well, of course, intelligence is one of the things. He's not fully educated on societal things, you know, on how society really does function. He just bases his opinions on what he's seen or what he believes or whatever, you know, whatever he wants to believe, whatever he's telling himself. He, like I said, he's delusional. So I thought his quote about women who try to be men are unhappy and vice versa was completely incorrect because, you know, my slave is super happy. I'm happy. And it has nothing to do with me wanting to be something that I'm not. It's actually about me being something that I am. And you can be, you know, in any different form. You can be a trans dom. You can be a trans sub. You can be a gay dom, a gay sub. It's, you know what? It's all what you're doing in your bedroom. That's all something for each person to choose. And it's not for somebody like Andrew to say, this is how it needs to be. So he's really pushing his prerogatives and his ideas on others, which is really unfair. And it also, for the men who, or the boys who are becoming men, it doesn't give them the proper information. And that is causing misinformation. And that's why he gets deplatformed, because it's not about his free speech. You know, I have free speech. People would think, oh, well, here's a woman who believes in female supremacy, and how dare she talk about, you know, a man who wants male supremacy. I mean, how's that fair? Oh, there's no justice, you know, she wants the same thing as I. It's just she's a female wanting what I want, and I'm a male. Well, no, what you want is repression. What I want is, I want authenticity, and I want to make my partners experience what they want. It's not what I want. It's what they want. And I know what I want, and I want a partner who appreciates that, you know, respects me. So anyway, I was going on about the poly situation. So Bunny and I were talking about it. So my husband, yes, I'm married. Surprise, surprise. And my husband is not Bunny, but my husband and I are best friends. And some would think, well, you know, okay, so you're in a poly situation. It must be you, your husband's the bull, Bunny's the sub, the cuckold sub, because, you know, we've talked about cuckolding and such. And no, it's not the case. Every situation is different. My husband has a girlfriend, and those are all things that we've discussed and figured out, negotiated. But what I'm trying to get at is my husband is probably the most masculine man anybody would come across. If, you know, if you're looking at that picture of, in your mind, of what masculine is, which is toxic even saying that, basically. But if somebody like Andrew were to say, well, you're not with a real man. Well, yes, I am, actually. I've got two men that are extremely masculine, but who have different tastes in the bedroom. And so my husband, he's a dominant. He's a dominant man. He's got a job that is something that you would expect a extremely masculine man would do. And, but that doesn't make him a terrible person. And that's what I think the most important message here is, that you can be a man, but still have respect. And so, and then I've got my partner, Bunny, and, you know, my husband's cool with him. Like, they get along. They're like best friends. And, you know, my husband's dominant, Bunny's submissive. We have a different kind of a poly than some, but everybody's poly is different than the others. So I've experienced the cult that I was brought up in, which was full of misogyny. And then I got married to somebody within the cult who is masculine, dominant, but very kind, very respectful. Never pushed me to do anything I didn't want to do. Always helped in the kitchen. Just, you know, like the roles in the house weren't, well, the wife does this and the husband does that. Regardless of what the cult told us to believe, we did not live that way in our own little sphere together. We did not live the way they told us to live, you know, and we broke free of that, which is wonderful. And then I've got, you know, my slave, and he can be extremely masculine. He's got a lot of interests that are very masculine. You know, he loves anything to do with being a pilot, you know, anything to do with flying and war history and rough and ready. He likes to go on hikes. It's baseball. He loves baseball. He just loves all this stuff. You know, I mean, I'm not going to pigeonhole him into the minute when, if I were to see him, when I first actually found out about him, it was from a dom who said, "Hey, Chastity Queen, you're going to love this guy. He's masculine, but he loves to dress up." I'm like, yeah, that's perfect for me, you know, because I like a mix, you know, I like a little mix of this and a little mix of that. I think it makes life interesting and a little spicy, you know, and so we can go bombing around town and have a great old time in his vehicle and, you know, rough and ready. And I've got my kind of, you know, tank top and shorts on, and I'm like kind of like a bit of a little masculine, I guess, in my persona. And it doesn't mean I'm not a female. It's just kind of, I guess, a tomboy, someone would call me. Yeah, somebody like Andrew doesn't realize that there's so many different ways a man can be a man. And he can even dress up like a woman and still be a man and still feel strong afterwards and not feel degraded, or even be degraded and then still be strong within himself. And that takes, it's the internal strength that is the measure of a man. It's not how he looks, what he drives, how many women he fucks, how much money he has in the bank. It really isn't. That does not equate to a man. It's what the inside is. It's what's inside that really is the mark of good character in a man. And I really need that to be communicated to the world. You know, I really want that to be expressed, and I want people to take that information and run with it. Anyway, I'm going to get my lovely slave, my man slave, to talk to you in a second here.
It's funny. You talked about, how we talked about your husband and everything, and how it's like you brought up that point about, he's like manly man. Like, when I came in, I didn't think I was going to replace him. I had no thought of replacing him. I respected him and his position. So it wasn't like I was like, I'm just going to come in here and we're going to ride off into the sunset. No, it was like, I knew the deal. I came in and I was like, so you're the husband and how's it going? You know, like, I mean, it was funny because it's like our first, my first time meeting him was, we did like a photo shoot because he's a photographer too. Right. So, and we were doing a photo shoot together, and it was like, he was grumpy, and that's kind of a little bit of a thing with him. He has that grumpy persona at times, which is sometimes pretty funny. And he was grumpy. So it was like, he wasn't very personable then, but you know, I didn't disrespect him. I was like, we just did our thing and we got along. So whatever. It was, and you know, like you said, we're like best friends now. So, I mean, been for a while. I mean, we got a lot in common. We like the same kind of stuff, right? I mean, I've been picking his brain about photography and stuff too, right? And yeah. You also mentioned how like he would be, or Andrew Tate, going, changing the subject here, making it clear I'm changing the subject. How he would be like, well, you're just, you know, you're just promoting dominating men and I'm just promoting dominating women. It's like, well, to an extent, yes, but at the same, but you're not promoting violence against men, at least not unconsensual violence. I mean, obviously we have impact play. So, but I don't really consider that violence. I just had to say consensual violence because it hit me as I was thinking about it. I'm like, oh yeah, that would be kind of considered violence, but it's not because it's consensual. Again, we have our safe words. If, you know, I'm gagged and blindfolded and stuff, you give me a drop signal. But I mean, it's rare we use those things. You're usually pretty good at telling whether or not you're pushing right to the edge or something. So, but we still keep them. We still use them. I mean, there was one point we're playing on something and I accidentally dropped the drop signal and you still stopped the session. So that is the big difference right there. You're not promoting violence against men. You're not saying it's okay to beat a man's ass because he doesn't listen to you. You're just like, where he's like, yeah, saying, yeah, yeah, you know, women, it's okay. Like, you know, it's their fault they're getting raped or assaulted and stuff. It's like, no, no, it wouldn't be the same thing at all. Also yesterday, yeah, you're in the nail salon. I was outside waiting in the Jeep and you said to the estheticians that I was your, manslave. I don't know how exactly you said it, but, but you were just telling them and it's like, you said something about there was a younger woman there and she was like, kind of like reacting, well, that's a thing. You're telling me this afterwards. I was pretty amused by it because I don't really care. It doesn't bother me. Like we talked about in our previous podcast, it's like, it doesn't bother me getting emasculated. It really doesn't. So
yeah, as Bunny was saying, I was at the nail salon yesterday and the nail technician actually said to me, oh, ma'am, where's your boyfriend? And I said, oh, he's not here right now. She says, yeah, because the last time he had come, I had him massage my shoulders while I was sitting in the chair getting my nails done. And she got a real kick out of it. And I said, oh, that's my manslave. So, and the girl beside me, who is probably 19, 20 years of age, she looked over and just smiled at me like, that's amazing. Because even when I talk just generally about having a man who's in slavery to me, or I said, oh, he's going to pay for it, you know, he's going to pay for the nails, of course. Of course the man should pay. But I said, my slave's going to pay for that. So they thought that was pretty cool. And, you know, and I said, because women should be worshipped. Women should be pampered. Because women should be the boss. Because the nail tech says, you're the boss. And I said, oh yeah, I'm the boss. I said, but that's how women should be. Women should be the boss. And so that might seem toxic, but it's not. Because in the dredges of society, it's filled with misogyny. And I think that sometimes you have to shock the world into maybe reframing things and looking at things differently and seeing the importance of females and how they should be worshipped. You know, as in the old days, so many women were, the old days, olden days, women were worshipped and revered as goddesses. And why has that changed, and why should that change? It really shouldn't. Something I wanted to mention too, actually, was when you said that I'm, regarding the impact play, that I'm not promoting violence. Well, I only promote it, actually, when it's for pleasure. So when you've decided that you derive pleasure from pain, and it gives you a sexual reaction, and it might be any number of ways to be hit or impacted. You know, it could be cock and ball torture. It could be you just like having your back flogged. You like your ass whipped. You like your ass spanked. You like nipple torture or clamps on your nipples. You know, if you don't like the word torture. And cock and ball torture, well, that's relative. You know, if somebody off the street who has never heard of BDSM heard me say, I like to do cock and ball torture on my partner, they'd think I'm an abuser, which in their realm, that would be abuse. They would think, consider that abuse, but they don't know the specifics. So I think that until you know the specifics and you realize how in-depth BDSM is with partnership and what's involved in high protocol BDSM, which is what I partake in, is high protocol. And I think everybody should be high protocol in everything they do in life, you know, with manners, even just using high protocol behavior in front of your elderly parents or your elderly grandparents. You know, I was talking to someone today and talking about how they know somebody who's an older guy. He goes to visit his grandmother, and he's in his 30s, and he uses swear words constantly, right? It's just bad behavior. It's just bad etiquette. You know, you just don't do that. It's not cool. Just not cool. And I think there's a lot of things in life that aren't cool. And when somebody keeps perpetrating the same verbal terrorism on society, on platforms, they need to be stopped. And because it is, it's terrorism. It's an absolute crime. So if I'm promoting, you know, a positive experience by facilitating impact play, by facilitating dressing my slave up as a girl, or degrading her, or emasculating her, whatever the case might be. It's not anything that's against the female gender at all. It's not. I think sometimes people make that mistake. They think, well, you're making fun of the female gender by sissifying a man. No, I'm not. A sissy's a sissy. You know, that's all it is. A sissy's a sissy. And if you want to be dressed up like, want to be made fun of, because you know you're a man, but you're dressed up like a woman, you're dressed up like a really silly, frilly sissy, then more power to you, I say. You know, enjoy it. It's sexual. It's exciting. It's part of your headspace. And I think that now that sexuality is so risky for a lot, you know, there's so many transmittable diseases you can get now. Some people are going with a new mentality of staying virgins for a long, long time. Or maybe, you know, being asexual. They don't want to engage in a sexual manner. They don't want to kiss. They don't want to, you know, have penetrative sex. But they still want to have a romantic experience. And that's doable. You know, you can experience that and have a very fulfilling life without even having sex. That's another thing I want to talk about is, you know, the bull and the dom scenario with a cuckold. So I have a lot of people assuming that because I'm a female dominant, I could have as many men as I want. Andrew Tate talks about having concubines and how it's biblical. Men had concubines, so it's fine. He said you never see a female having concubines in the Bible. That's why it's supposed to be the man having multiple women. Well, that's an absolute crock of shit. First of all, okay, I might be a female dominant, and I might be able to have 20 men be my sexual slaves. But that's not who I am. Just because I fall under the category of, oh, now my slave wants to be a cuckold, and I'm going to have a partner that's not him, doesn't necessarily mean I want a bull. So that begs the question, okay, well, what do you want, chastity queen? What is it that you want? You don't want to have 10 guys servicing you? No, I don't. Like, seriously, I really don't. I just have never been a revolving door kind of sexual play person. If you want to do it, that's great, but it's just not me, and that's why I want to repeat myself. It's individual. Everybody's sexual style is individual. And I think at the very top of everything is that there's got to be respect and love. And when there's no respect and no love, there can only be anything underneath that, which can be a number of just nasty things. You know, don't pigeonhole me. I'm not going to pigeonhole you. Now, that being said, Andrew Tate is pigeonholing himself. He's saying, this is what I am. I'm not ashamed of it. I'm not apologetic. And I believe that I can get away with crimes in Europe where I couldn't get away with them in the U.S. And then he says he's speaking out about cancel culture on Twitter, right? And I'm just thinking, you got yourself canceled, you idiot. You know, you start to talk about crimes, committing them against women. I mean, the guy wouldn't last in prison. I mean, there's a little thing called prison rules, and I don't think he knows about the prison rules, but they don't really appreciate anybody who is abusive to women or children. And when a person comes into a prison system where they have abused a woman or a child or raped, either or, they do not fare very well. They fare very badly. And that's common knowledge. So I don't know where he thinks he's popular or accepted in the male society, but I know for a fact the men will not give him the time of day that have any worth at all. Men who have worth and who are successful, who are truly successful, are humble and they are self-confident. And what he is not any of that. He's not humble and he has no self-confidence. It's quite obvious in how he speaks and what he says. And so if he wants to be a bully, then he can be a bully on his own time. But I would like to suggest that he take maybe a little trip into the local prison there and see how he fares. Now, let's take it one step further. So we've got a person like Jake Paul who wants to fight Jake Paul, whatever. That's fine. But I suggest that isn't enough. I think we need somebody like Kayla Harrison or Nunez, right? Amanda Nunez. Amanda Nunez to go in and see what happens in the ring with that piece of shit man, how he would fare after he came out of that fight. And now tell women that they belong in the kitchen and they're not strong and they're not smart or they're not anybody. I'd like to see that. So until I see a fight between him and a female, I think he's invalid. Now, if I were told, oh, chastity queen, do you want to take him into your dimension, into your dungeon, and see how much he can handle under my domination? And we consent to it, and we write a contract. And of course, because he's so masculine, he won't want to have safe words, but I'll make him have a safe word. And you know, I'd have a very specific tactic with him. And it would start with verbal humiliation. And I know that he would scream out a safe word after not too long, because I know it's in the very big, vast, empty mind in that head of his. And I could rip it down and strip it down and tear him down before I even got to a whip or a cane or a paddle, whatever the case might be. But if I like to see him come into my arena as a female dominant, and even if it was for 15 minutes, I would like to suggest that he would take me up on that offer. And it wouldn't just be an all-out attack. It would be verbal humiliation first. And I think being the misogynist that he is, he would say, give her 2 hours. Let her have 2 hours with me and see if I break. And I can tell you something. I would have my timer on and I would have him broken within 15 minutes, max. And I wouldn't even touch him. Not even touch him. Because a man like that is so easy to break. It's not going to be the girls who he pays for sex that are going to give him this lesson, because that's all he gets. He has females who he pays for a good time. And hey, I say take as much of his money as you can. You know, do it. More power to you, ladies. But I would like to say, take me up on the offer. What do you think of my offer there, Bunny, to Mr. Andrew Tate?
Yeah, I don't think he would actually do it. I mean, he would probably talk a big game and all that stuff. He'd be like, well, you wouldn't be able to take me in my arena. So that's probably the argument he would run with. And, you know, so it's kind of funny, right? Yeah, it's just a, yeah, and I agree. I mean, it's like, I'm pretty sure we can both see what he really is. It's just putting on an act. Because, like I said, that one fighter who, I believe he was a Dutch fighter, I don't know his exact name, and the one who only fought him for like a minute or two in the first round and gave him quite a few face punches, just said, yeah, he just puts on an act. It's all an act. He read him. I mean, and exactly that's. And we love watching USC and all that stuff. So, like, both of us. So, it's like, and those are always the best fighters. The ones that read their opponent. The ones that can tell exactly when to strike, when to fall back. And that's exactly what the guy did. And that's exactly what you would do. I mean, we already figured the guy out. We know we're pretty sure he's an insecure person. Because again, it's like you don't get that to be that toxic masculine without being insecure, really. I mean, I'm not like a professional, mental health professional or anything that knows this kind of stuff, not a psychiatrist, but just from observation, like usually people who go that far usually have some actual insecurity. And again, it's exactly what you do. You would figure that out, and it's not hard. You already did. It's not, and you would just exploit it. And like you said, 15 minutes, he'd probably be a sobering mess. So there you go.
I think his arena is more than just in a ring. You know, his arena, as one of these articles about him was discussing, is in the bedroom. And, you know, mine is in a dungeon. And so it's where sexual things happen. And I'm going to read a couple things here, but basically he says, it's bang out the machete, boom in her face, and grip her by the neck. Shut up, bitch, he says in one video, acting out how he'd attack a woman if she accused him of cheating. In another, he describes throwing a woman's things out of the window. In a third, he calls an ex-girlfriend who accused him of hitting her, an allegation he denies, a dumb hoe. Tate's views have been described as extreme misogyny by domestic abuse charities, capable of radicalizing men and boys to commit harm offline. But the 35-year-old is not a fringe personality lurking in an obscure corner of the dark web. Instead, he is one of the most famous figures on TikTok, whose videos of him have been watched 11.6 billion times. Styled as a self-help guru, offering his mostly male fans a recipe for making money, pulling girls, and escaping the matrix, Tate has gone in a matter of months from near obscurity to one of the most talked about people in the world. In July, there were more Google searches for his name than for Donald Trump or Kim Kardashian. He's really becoming popular in TikTok, and I think that if Facebook and Instagram has deplatformed him, then it's about time that he gets deplatformed as well on TikTok, because that is spreading some seriously infected verbal diarrhea to the masses, and he needs to be cut off. So I just say, you know what, if I got him in my realm, which is my dungeon, then he would have to put up with me in the manner in which I would dish out, just like he dishes out to all these women that he abuses. You know, karma's an interesting thing, and I think that karma does definitely work. I've seen so many people with dark energies end up in very bad, bad situations. Even if they start out seemingly on top, they fall pretty quickly when karma gets a hold of them. So I don't even know if I need to introduce him to my dungeon, but I tell you, he wouldn't have a fun time there. And I'm a more mature woman. I'm not between 18 and 25, which is his, pretty much his category of females. He likes 18 and 19-year-olds because he can stamp his impression on them, apparently. That's his quote. So I don't think he could handle somebody in my category. And let's just leave it at that. He's a 35-year-old and he's a loser. So that's where it ends.
So, yeah, he started talking about pilots and stuff. And it's like, oh, he's like, well, would you trust a man or a woman if you're going into a hurricane or something? And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to bring up a point that there are female naval aviators. Okay. So, and just to drive that point home, I'm going to say that during the Vietnam War, and it doesn't involve any women in this because they didn't know, the women didn't fly at that point for the Navy, at least not in combat, but they did some studies actually of stress levels. And they found out that pilots doing carrier landings at night had actually a higher stress level than they were over North Vietnam. And they were getting shot at and often and losing their lives, getting shot down, all that kind of stuff. And that was always a risk. I mean, it was intense. I mean, Hanoi was considered the most heavily defended target from air attack in the world at the time. And they were having higher stress levels landing on a ship at night than they were over Hanoi. So that goes to tell you the level at which a naval aviator has to conduct themselves. So now they have women who are actually flying F-35s and F-A-18s and I think even Tomcats before they're retired. You just don't sit there and qualify for day landings. If you qualify to be a carrier, if you qualify to fly off a carrier, you have to qualify to fly day and night, which means you have to make carrier landings. And if you can deal with that kind of stress level, I'm pretty sure you can handle anything. Like, so that just nullifies the point that, yeah, okay, like men just make better pilots. It's like, no, it's all to the individual. some people, like, again, like, some men can't handle stress and some women can better than men. So it's, you know, it's not a sex thing. It's a personality thing. What that person can handle. Everyone's different. I'm sure there's plenty of women that can handle certain stresses that I would just sit there and be like, nope, can't even deal with it. Nope. And if, for them, it'd be nothing. Right. So it's a personality thing.
And I would say it's a skill thing. It's a talent thing. And I think that it doesn't really matter what's in your panties or your underwear or your boxers or whether you're going commando or not and you're a female or a male. It's about what's in the brain. I've always said this about sex even. It's not about what's between your legs. It's about what's between your ears. So when you start to think about gender as, well, they can't do this or they can't do that or they can only do this and they're only good at this or that, that is disrespecting intelligence. And so that's where I'm going with that. I would also suggest that, you know, the argument that many men, they would choose the masculine, the male, to fly through that hurricane in a storm versus the female, they're forgetting something. And this is what I say about female domination and female superiority, okay? Because I am going to say, I agree in female domination. I agree in female support superiority. I really do. Female supremacy, the whole nine yards. Yes, I believe in it, okay? When you take a man with logic and skill and you put him in a cockpit, you get something wonderful. You get results. When you put a woman in a cockpit with skill and intelligence and logic, but add in that extra little bit of edge of emotion, she's going to come up higher than that person who doesn't have the emotion. Because she's considering everything, including the passengers in the cabin and the fact that they have families. And she considers the emotional aspect. So that gives her an even more motivation to do a good job. I would say if I had a choice between a man and a woman, I would choose the woman. If they were had the same skill set, they had the same talents, they had the same logic, I would still choose a woman. And not just because I'm into female supremacy, maybe that's part of it, but mostly because she has a full view of every aspect, not just the logic. So where men are lacking that whole package, in essence, in that situation, she can say to herself, I don't want my passengers to die because of the emotional side. So maybe that sounds like I'm totally hypocritical in my stance, but based on those factors, I choose the woman. That's my choice. Just like somebody can say, I choose a man because he's not emotional. I choose a woman because she's emotional. For that very reason, because everything else can add up. They can match on every front, but you add in, you pepper in just a little bit of emotion, and you have the whole package. So I'm going to stand by that. If somebody wants to challenge me on it, go for it, because I'm not going to stop thinking exactly that way. You can't change my mind, not for a second. So since, Bunny, you brought up a very good point, and as you said, hurricanes move, well, you said this to me on the side, hurricanes move exceptionally slow in their pattern. So when an airplane goes up, they would know a hurricane is forming and traveling to a certain direction. And so that just nullifies everything that Andrew Tate would say, because He doesn't even know what he's saying in the first place. His example is complete garbage. You know, that a hurricane's coming. Well, who would you? Okay, so let's pretend that some idiotic flight plan was created where there was going to be a hurricane that just imaginarily showed up within, you know, seconds of a flight happening, which is probably very slim to none. Okay, so Andrew, you have it wrong already. In that case, you would choose a man. Well, guess what? I would still choose a woman. I still win. I still win. Anyway, I guess so. The main thing is we want to talk about misogyny, toxic masculinity, that subject, and we could go on and on and on. But and so what I would say is, you know, TikTok, it's time to take him off of there. Facebook, you've got them all, him off. Instagram, he's gone. He was banned for a short period of time, apparently, on Twitter. Maybe he still is. I found a small Twitter account that may or may not be him that says he doesn't feel that he's on the side of cancel culture and that real men don't go to their knees. They stand tall, and yet he wants all of his women to go on their knees for him. So I think it's time he takes a knee and he realizes defeat, that nobody likes him. He's an absolute and utter loser. Now, if he goes and gets some education and starts to rethink his stance, then I will give him a second chance. But at this point, based on everything I've seen and based on his effect on others, especially the youngsters who follow him on TikTok, I find a lot of predators often prey on the children and prey on their ideas because their minds are still quite malleable. And it seems like that's the only segment of society that he can influence. And when it comes to those who are mature and smart and experienced and wise and intelligent, he will never win and he will be canceled. So I suggest that TikTok needs to get rid of him ASAP. Until he decides that he's going to go and get an education and rethink and apologize for all of the hateful things he said about women. As I quoted him saying at the very beginning of this podcast, he said, "We suffer," and then he meant modern society, "that we are plagued by monumental cowardice among the male population. Everyone's a pussy," he says. "Everyone's a pussy. They're a bunch of pussies, all these men." So you're essentially calling your own gender pussies because they don't think like you. It makes no sense. You're basically betraying your own gender by calling them all pussies. And I think that that's something that all men have to look at and say, well, we can't back that man who is calling his own masculinity, a pussy. He's calling us female, I guess, weak, supposedly. And I would say men are not weak, just as women are not weak. The only people that are weak are the ones that are weak-minded and have weak thoughts and weak ideas. And his ideas are weak. It's kind of like, you know, when you want a really nice, strong cup of tea, it's delicious. It's well-bodied. You've let it brew for a while. But him, I consider his ideas cricket's pee. He should know what that means in the United Kingdom. Cricket's pee. Right? You dip the bag and you pull it out. That's what they call the tea in England when it's not properly brewed. Cricket's pee. You are simply cricket's pee, Andrew Tate. And you need to look in that humongous mirror that's above your bed that you spend most of your time looking at, because that's who you love the most, is yourself, right? The minute you start loving others and being grateful for the things that you have and not taking credit for everything in the world, you say you have $1 trillion. Nobody has $1 trillion, my dear, especially not you. And even if you had $1 trillion, it would not be enough money to get you properly educated in true humanity and love and gratitude. So get real, because the universe is listening and the universe is hearing your hate speech. Karma is a bitch. Karma will come to get you. And you need to change now before that day comes. Though I would suggest that that day is here. So I would like to thank you for tuning in to Diaries of a Dom plus Questions Answered with me, Chastity Queen, and my lovely submissive slave, Bunny, or CQ's Bunny. We had a very thought-provoking conversation about toxic masculinity and misogyny, and I am so happy that I'm surrounded by the most amazing submissives and slaves in my world, or the world of BDSM, because there are so many that are very successful and they're submissive as well. So what a beautiful thing. I also want to say before I sign off completely, don't forget to subscribe to my OnlyFans under Chastity Queen, where I have over 7,000 photos and 700 plus videos to enjoy, and more content coming every single day. And if you want a fantastic chastity device or a high quality strap-on, go to lockedinlust.com for the vice or the crotch rocket at 15% off a discount using discount code ChastityQueen. So until next time, my lovelies, I will be doing a Storytime Sunday next Sunday. But until then, I will say so long. Bye for now.